Our subject tonight is Highways to Havoc, H-A-V-O-C, Havoc. A highway is a road. Havoc means destruction. Jesus said, wide is the road that leadeth to destruction. We can't say today what was said in the days of Shamgar and Joel, the highways are unoccupied. But we can say what old Amos the prophet said, in all the highways, they shall say alas. What we find in the book of Judges, a Amasa wallowed in his blood in the highway. We think of that when we remember in the last 10 years, 500,000 people have been killed on the highways of America, our super speedways and highways. But I'm not to talk to you tonight out of my heart about these highways of concrete and steel, but about some highways of havoc that pertain to our home life, our church life, our school life, our community life, our national life, our world life, and our own individual lives, highways over which multitudes of people go in and on and over these double-devised highways of havoc. The first highway I mention is the highway of wickedness. We're living in a day when it could be said about us what was said about Sodom, that the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked in the sight of the Lord. We live at a time now, and you don't have to be pessimistic to say it, when men loose their wild tongues that hold not God in awe and make freedom speech to be turned into the serpent's hiss. Moses said to his people of old, you have done exceedingly sinful, and your sins have provoked God to anger. And God was angry with you to destroy you, but I prayed unto the Lord, and he hearkened unto me. On this highway of wickedness we find women concerning whom this is true. She that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. So we have a lot of dead women walking all around in our cities, driving our automobiles, sitting in these impermanent beauty parlors, because they're living in pleasure, and Paul said they're dead while they live. In this highway of wickedness there are those who are lovers of themselves, covetous, proud, boastful, blasphemers, unholy, and guilty of unreasonable relationships, and incontinent and truce breakers and traitors and fierce and incontinent lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. In this highway of wickedness there are many people who do not believe that the way of the ungodly shall perish. They do not believe that he that what a man sows that shall he also reap. Even though history is full of illustrations of this tragic truth, this terrible truth that whatever we sow, we shall reap. We sow the wind, we shall reap the whirlwind. If we roll a stone upon another, that stone will return. And when it does so, it will return with increased weight and crushing power. So we look and we find how Jacob stung his father's heart. Then his own home became a nest of hissing vipers. Remember that David wrecked a home because of his lust, and his own home was wrecked because of the lust of his wicked sons. Haman built a gallows for the Jew whom he hated, and he died on that same gallows while Mordecai went to a place of honor. Nero's mother killed her husband that she might make secure the throne for her son. Then her son killed her because he wanted to make the throne secure. Terrible things of the French Revolution, the bitter agonies that Robespierre got going, ended with his head blooding the blade of the guillotine. He reaped what he sowed. We find in this life that the spiritual harvest is true from the cradle to the grave and from the grave to the throne of God. Yet how difficult it is today, in this day of dry-eyed, glass-eyed congregations, to get people to believe that the wages of sin is death, and that whatsoever man sows, whatever woman sows, that shall she reap. The second highway I mentioned is a highway of criminality. We live in a day when this highway has on it men and women, boys and girls, living the criminal life. We talk today about the crises that we face. The crisis of the tax levy, which a lot of people don't like. There's a crisis with those who want their salaries raised as federal employees. There's a crisis, a double crisis of Vietnam and inflation, and the crisis of our national debt. Our national debt is one that staggers imagination. Our national debt is over $4 billion. It would take three stacks of silver dollars reaching from here to the moon to pay our national debt. Take all the United States senators counting $2 per second for 6 to 4 years, non-stop, to count our national debt. Take a train 36 miles long with 3,456 boxcars crammed full of dollar bills to pay our national debt. If you give away $100,000 a day, listen to me, $100,000 a day take 2,724 years to pay off our national debt. And our national debt is over $4 billion, and so the crisis is it take a man 10,294 years to count our national debt at the rate of $100,000 a day. It staggers the human mind. It baffles our imagination, no matter how wild his imagination might be. But all the crises which we face today is not the crisis of a national debt, not the crisis of inflation or recession or Vietnam's war, but the crisis of criminality which is organized and arrogant in our land. Who would make our land of the free and the home of the brave to become the land of the spree and the home of the rave? And our crime wave has reached such intensity and such awful force and power that the whole land is blanketed with crime. The man has no refuge from the assaults that will come from unexpected sources sometime when you think you go home by yourself in the dark, whether you get in the house or not. If you get in the house, whether somebody may kill you or kidnap you or not. On my own beautiful street where I live in Memphis, in two blocks, there have been four little ladies raped in the last 6 weeks in Memphis, Tennessee. And it's that way all over our land. And when you come to think of this crime wave, it doesn't get less. It gets larger and larger and larger. Despite all our educational institutions, despite all our evangelism, despite all our conventions, despite all our churches, this crime wave increases. Constitutional authority and the rule of order is assaulted day by day. Look at our national capital, and venereal disease is epidemic in our national capital. And all over our land, venereal diseases are rampant among young folks and middle-aged folks and even some old folks. And I think today and tonight, I've been a preacher 64 years, and I'm not in distress, but I've never been I've never been so in distress in all my 64 years as a preacher about schools and home life and national life and community life as we have it today. I say I'm in distress, though I'm not in despair. The subcommittee appointed by the United States Senate made some investigations. They found our schools in turmoil, some of them wrecked with violence and vandalism. And 75% of the school teachers in East St. Louis carry guns, not for discipline, but to protect themselves from assaults inside and outside the schoolroom. Think of a thing like that. Here in Philadelphia, they've added some assistant policemen to look after the discipline in the schools. One of our school superintendents in Memphis just last week, when they were talking about the lack of discipline and how hard it is to discipline these young folks, said, "I've been a superintendent of this school for 22 years. Said, I've never seen my 12-year-olds as vulgar and as mean and low down in my life as I have this year." That's in Memphis, Tennessee, the city which I love and where I live. Maybe go to heaven from there. I don't know. I don't mean I don't know where I go to heaven, but I don't know where I go from Memphis or not. determined that this subcommittee said that many of our schools had turned to barbed wire fences and floodlights and police dogs and heavy grill iron doors and plastic windows and all sorts of electronic alarm systems in our schools. When I think of the mess and the meanness that's in our world today, I have sympathy with the poet who wrote this verse: I vow, O God, not for all our power, full and unfurled, would I assume the ignominious guilt of having made such folks in such a world. The third highway that I want to mention to you about that leads to havoc is a highway of the misuse and abuse of sex. Now, sex is of God. God meant it for it to be a minister of life. And sex in its legitimate and Christian use is a thing of pleasure and joy. But outside of that, when it's misused and abused, it's a source of many curses and much misery and much sadness. And sex ought never to be the subject of some smutty joke. It ought never to be something about which people laugh. To laugh about sex as a gift from God is like laughing at the Holy of Holies in the temple. Because of the legitimate use and Christian use of sex, we have the laughter of little innocent children and a home life and order and an earthly paradise. And Christianity sanctifies and reinforces sex in its legitimate use, its Christian use. But when sex is abused and misused, it's a source of misery and woe and heartache. It turns marriages into mourning. It puts poison ivy in the bride's bouquet. It sows down the fibers of the human being in the society of our land with all sorts of evil and dirt and uncleanness, which makes us to be horrified sometimes. Solomon knew what he was talking about when he said, discretion shall preserve thee from the wicked woman, the strange woman. He that goeth into her doth not lay hold on life. Her feet lead to death, and her footsteps take hold on hell. The adulteress seeketh for the precious life, and he that committeth adultery with a woman destroyeth his own soul. Yet we have so many people today who display sex and appeal to sex in an evil way, when God meant for it to be a minister of life and joy and blessing to the human race. Oh, this terrible thing, misused and abused as it sometimes is. Jesus said, whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery already with her in his heart. And he could have said, when a woman looks upon a man to lust after him in her heart, she has committed adultery already with him in her heart. Jesus said that. Yet we live in a time now when people don't want a preacher to mention adultery. He mentions, he talks about affinity. Miss Wilcox wrote a poem called A Squander, which has never left my mind since I first memorized it. Years ago, God gave him passion splendid as a sun, meant for the lordless purposes of put of nature, part of nature's full and fertile mother heart, from which new systems and new worlds are spun. Now behold, behold what he hath done. In father's court and carnal pleasures marred, he flung the wealth God gave him at the start. At dawn he stood, potential, operant with manhood's emotions keen. At noon he stands, with all love's large fortune spent in petty traffic, unproductive mean, a pauper curse by his abuse of sex. We have many people on that highway of abuse and misuse of sex. And I'd like to mention the highway, the boulevard of booze. Oh, it's crowded. Look at all our advertisements and hear all this dear mess on the radios. Makes you think of America living in a stomach, not in a heart. First thing you ask now when you get on an airplane, you want a cocktail, sir? I was asked that three times on my trip to Seattle recently. Finally, the beautiful little stewardess asked me the third time, sir, do you want a cocktail? I said, look at me, honey, do I look like a fool? there, sweetie? She said, no, sir, you're nice looking. Well, I said, don't ask me to take any sewage and put it in my stomach then. If we had one hair in our heads that doesn't, that famous liquor, we ought to pull it out. If we had one hair that doesn't hate liquor, we ought to pull it out, no matter how bald-headed it might make us. Liquor, booze. Booze is sewage and poison in the drinking fountain. It's strychnine in the baby's milk bottle. It's poison ivy in the bride's bouquet. It's a rat snake in the kindergarten. It's a mad dog in the children's playground. It's a rapist in a girl's dormitory. It's a maniac wielding a razor in an old folks' home. We ought to hate it. Liquor never touched an individual that didn't leave an indelible stain. Never touched a home that didn't plant the seeds of dissolution and misery. Never touched a community that didn't lower the moral tone and chill religion and undermine law. Never touched a government that didn't clog the machinery of it and weaken patriotism and blight prosperity. Make people to believe that you get prosperity by lasting that which is wicked. General Pershing said, liquor, strong drink did my men more harm than the German bullets. And Lord George said, strong drink did more to destroy our nation than the submarines of the Germans. Mr. Gladstone said, the four great scourges that have been in the human race, war, pestilence, drink, and famine, and said, drink has done more harm than war and famine and pestilence put together. He said it. Mr. Hoover, and we owed a great debt to the FBI, Mr. Hoover, who now is dead so far as the body's concerned, who said 52% of the wrecks and our highways in America is involved in drunkenness. Evangeline Booth said liquor has hung more crepe, has sold more homes, plunged more people into bankruptcy, broke more wedding rings, slain more children, armed more villains, defiled more womanhood, blighted more innocence, cast more young women to the lions of lust, and has dug more graves than any scourge that ever swept like a poison pestilence across the face of the earth. We talk about folks going into the Hall of Fame. Booze has put thousands in the Hall of Shame, where just a few have gone in the Hall of Fame. 10,000 people die from the bottle where one dies from a mad dog. But we shoot the mad dog and license the liquor business and call ourselves a sensible nation. You can't get anybody running for high office now to take any stand against the liquor business. You look on the TV and see leaders of nations toasting themselves with doctor. And I don't have any single person in mind when I'm saying that. How we need to know how many multitudes are traveling this booze boulevard, where war has killed its thousands, booze has killed its 10,000s. I could write a whole book about tragedy that I've seen in my own churches, in my own church membership, where people became victims of alcohol. I don't call anybody an alcoholic, whether she be a woman or man. I call them a plain, stupid drunk. And I'd like to mention the highway of materialism. We live in a time now when, despite what Jesus said, a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of things which he possesseth. We live in a time when people are victims of things-itis. Things, the craze for things is bearing the souls of many down and eating away at their souls like tuberculosis and cancer in the tender fibers of the human body. Whether it be in New York or Fu Chao, whether it be in Borneo or Philadelphia, materialism, the craze for things is abroad. Automobiles, motorboats, motorcycles, bicycles, radio sets, TV sets, bathrooms, lingerie, fur, hot pants, pantyhose, wigs, swimming pools, motels, hotels, cameras, vacuum cleaners, all these things. And it looked like the things of the soul are crammed into a little index at the back of the Book of Life, making life more of a sealed throwback catalog and a golden treasure of the truth and for the enrichment of life. Things. Materialism is in sympathy with and in friendship with infidelic nonsense that's abroad in our world today. And materialism is a polygamous marriage with skepticism, which seals and blights the soul, and with modernism, which cankers and chills the heart, and with liberalism, which encourages paganism and atheism, and with evolution, which caricatures change, curses, and crucifies educational minds the world over today. Materialism soothes and then smites the human conscience. It takes credit for all advances and inventive science. It takes credit for all of that. And it's a threat to social life because of its carnival of appetites. It's a threat to business life because of its clash of selfish interests. It's a threat to state life because of its divorce of morals and politics. Materialism in our world today. And it's all abroad. Things, Jesus said, a man's life doesn't consist in the abundance of things which he possesseth. I have a dear friend of mine who used to be a little boy in the first little church I had. First little church I had had 43 members, and it paid me $50 a year for one Sunday a month. He tried to raise my salary to $75 a year. Brother Burkott sat over the window so he could spit out of it. He kept it open most of the time. He got up and said, "My brethren and my sisters, I love our young preacher as much as any of you uns, but we uns can't afford to bite off more than we can chew or swallow digest. And far as I'm concerned, we're already paying for much that we're getting." Well, I agreed with that. Well, I went out to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And the man may be here tonight, I don't know, I hope he is. He phoned me in the motel, said, "Do you remember a fellow by the name of Fred Cox?" I said, "Yes, he used to be a little 10-year-old boy in my first little church, Lima Baptist Church." He said, "Well, I'm out in Oklahoma, and I'm going to pick you up at 8 o'clock and bring you out and let you have breakfast on my ranch." So they brought a great big long Continental car. Almost had to have a telephone to talk from the back seat to the front. All he could talk about was his ranch and his entertainment city and all like that. And finally I said, "Fred, how many of these thousands of acres of your ranch are going to take you to bury in?" I said, "Going to take an acre to bury you? You're going to take no more than I have. It's about 6 feet long and 6 feet deep and 2 feet wide." I said, "How much of this land is going to take to bury your body in when you die? You just talk about money and things and ranches and all this all the time. Fred, if you're here tonight, I want you to take me out to supper, please. And I won't talk about your money out there. But we live in a day when all the folks are just thinking about things and things and things. I won't talk about your money out there. But we live in a day when all the folks are just thinking about things and things and things." Just 3 weeks ago, I went through the Vanderbilt estate in Asheville, North Carolina. 125,000 acres. A mansion of 250 rooms. But when Mr. Vanderbilt died, he said, "Poor and needy, that's what I am." Oh, how tragic when people get to be victims of things-itis. Just things, things, things. That's materialism. And this road of materialism and evolution leads us into the highway of the highway of Habakkuk, forgetting God. Our nation is in great danger of forgetting God, forgetting our source, forgetting the place where our power shall come from, God Himself. I like what the young preacher said tonight. We lack power. Oh, we have our great church buildings and our educational things and our activities buildings, but we lack power, he said. And we do lack power. Southern Baptists can put the liquor business out legally if we wanted to, bad enough. Forgetting God. We've turned Sunday into fun day. Oh, as a troubled old Pharaoh, that his dilemma was that he forgot. He forgot the Nile River running blood, the frogs and the lice and the flies and the hail and the darkness and the death of the firstborn all over the land. And his epitaph, God overcame the Egyptians in the sea. And you think of old Belshazzar, he ought to have had some more sense than he showed. His father Nebuchadnezzar was put out like an old ox to eat grass, and his nails became like bird claws, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, and his hair became like bird feathers, and he ate grass like an ox. But Belshazzar forgot that, and one night he had a great banquet and used the temple, vestiges from the temple in this drunken parliament of hiccupers. And that night, he lost his kingdom. He had forgotten that no man can set himself against God and come out right. God is God's all-powerful, and to him the night and the day are both alike. The brightest noonday to us and the blackest midnight to God are just the same. He understands our thoughts are far off. I wonder sometimes he doesn't get provoked with the words of our mouths. Adam forgot, and he lost paradise. Judge Samson forgot and was shorn of his strength. King Saul, head and shoulders above other folks, forgot and lost his kingdom. And David forgot and reaped a bitter harvest in his own family circle. Judas forgot and died a wretched suicide. Peter forgot and drank the bitter cup of remorse as a denial of the Lord, denial of the Lord Jesus Christ. Nobody can forget God without bringing heartache to his own heart and disgrace to his own life and unhappiness to his own home and weakness to his own life. And I want us to think just a minute or two about that highway of infidelity where a lot of people are walking. Well, Dr. Julian Huxley, the Director General of UNESCO, whatever UNESCO means, said, science and knowledge has brought the world to the stage where God is no longer a useful hypothesis. And while a faint trace of God still broods over the world like the smile of a cosmic Cheshire cat, science and knowledge will soon rub that faint trace away. That's blatant infidelity. King David said, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Though that's true, though there are many people who say that everything came from nothing and everybody came from nobody, still we have them traveling that terrible highway of the cursedly unbelieving folks of the highway that denies that there's a God. Infidelity goes into the room where the little mother's dying and tries to take the prayer from her lips. They go in the church sanctuary and would break every string of the harp of its melody and revile every note of its worship. That's infidelity. A young man saw me some years ago and said, I don't believe anything. I'm an infidel. I said, oh, yes, you do believe something. I said, let me tell you the belief of your unbelief. You believe that providence is an idle dream, that prayer is a useless exercise, that life is without anticipation, that sin is without accountability, and conscience without responsibility, and that life has no hope beyond this life. That's what you believe. Tell me what you believe. That's what you believe. And that unbelief, the belief of your unbelief, is of hell and the devil. And it is.